Hello, and a very warm welcome to Showing Up with Good Culture. I'm Liz Matthews.
And I'm Jordan Mitchell. Showing Up is a podcast with purpose. We speak to the change makers who are positively contributing to culture in their own way to impact the world around them.
In this episode, we speak to Charlie Howard, author, brand founder, model, and activist, the true definition of a modern day polymath. Charlie has won legions of fans by sharing her mental health journey, talking openly about her commitment to self-love, and helping us all to love our bodies, no matter what.
Please be aware that this episode includes conversations about Charlie's eating disorders and her recovery. For anyone who'd like information on support groups in this area, please head to the show notes.
Charlie, thank you for showing up. Let's begin by sort of digging into the area of culture that you hope to positively contribute to. I guess, what made you show up today and what do you understand the term showing up to mean?
I think I view showing up as using your voice for good. And I don't think you have to necessarily be in the public eye in order to do that. I just think you have to believe in something. And I think we've all experienced things, or we've all been through things that are traumatic, or, you know, things that have changed us. And I think it's just important that we use that in order to educate people. And the more that we educate people, the better we can be as a society and as a culture. So that's probably what I would say is showing up. I guess my real thing in life that gets me up in the morning is wanting to help girls, because I think we've all dealt with, especially our generation has dealt with problems with men and with body image and these impossible standards that the media, etc., has put on us. So I just really want to be there for girls, and I think that's what showing up is for me.
And I think we've obviously known you for many years now, and
yeah,
one of the things that people just really love and respect about you is your vulnerability in that showing up. I think that vulnerable side of you is very much part of how you show up to help women, and also you really just sharing your journey from self-loathing through to self-love. Was you sharing your journey in part to sort of help others, but also for you to stay accountable so that you keep on track? You've put it out there now, so you have to almost honour that mission and that statement.
Yeah, 100%. And being vulnerable as well is actually a lot more difficult than people realise. I think as British people, we're very conscious about the way that we're perceived. And I think that being vulnerable is really, really difficult for most people, but British people especially. And so it took a long time for me to feel that I could be vulnerable, you know, especially women. You don't want to be seen as well as being weak or anything. I think there's a lot of pressure on women to try and be girl bosses or try to be really strong and that kind of thing. But actually being vulnerable can be a very good trait. And it's actually helped me, I think, a lot in my career. And like you said, I think people like to see that, and it's not something you should be embarrassed about at all. So yeah, but there is definitely an element of me that feels like, you know, it does keep me accountable. It does definitely keep me on track. You know, if ever I'm having a wobbly day with my mental health or feeling insecure or whatever, if I'm open about that on social media or whatever, or even with friends or whatever, it does definitely keep me on track. And I think being present in the moment as well is very important. You know, being present, you know, they say that if you're depressed, you live in the past. If you're anxious, you live in the future. But if you're comfortable, you live in the present. So that's what I really try to do. And sometimes if you face your problems head on and talk about them, you're less likely to kind of get back into that circle.
I think that's really powerful. And again, it's that notion of, you know, self-love is a constant dialogue with yourself. It's an ongoing process. And I don't think there's sort of a definitive end point where you go, right, well, I've completed sort of the self-love mission and I'm here now. So how do you continue to find ways to sort of to feel good about yourself?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I think the self-love movement or body positive movement or whatever can get a bit of bad press sometimes, because you can't be expected to wake up every day and think, yay, I'm having a great day. Yay, I love my body. Yeah, I feel great about the world and about life, because that just isn't normal. And actually, there are studies that say that the more that you try to be positive sometimes, actually, it can have a bit more of a negative effect. So again, like I was saying before, it's about being in the present and understanding that, you know, life will pretty much be a very straight linear line. You're going to have days that are highs, you're going to have days that are lows. But if you can try to, you know, think that imagining that being linear is actually okay and coming to terms with that, that's when you'll be happiest. So that's what I try to remember as well.
I think that's brilliant. And just to sort of take the listeners back a step. So in 2015, you put a post on Facebook, and that's kind of how we discovered you, really. It was a bit of a Black Mirror moment. Sort of overnight, you grew an audience and became a role model, whether you had intended to or not. And maybe it was just from a personal cathartic standpoint. But tell us a bit about what made you publish what you wrote that day and what you hoped would come from it.
Yeah, so I had been a straight size model, and I'm putting that in inverted commas because straight size means basically, you know, that traditional very skinny look of a model. And I've been doing that for about, by this point, probably about 5 years and wasn't going anywhere. I mean, it was always a case of, you know, when you get down to this size, we'll send you off to this casting person. And when you get down to this size, we'll send you off to this magazine and blah, blah, blah. And there'd be times where, you know, I went to Paris for a month. And they told everyone that I was ill for 2 weeks because they said I was too fat to go to castings and stuff. So rather than tell people, like rather than see me, they told them that I was ill because that would be much better than me turning up. And I was about a size 6 to 8 at the time, UK size 6 to 8. So it was just a really bizarre thing, and it really warps your mind. And anyway, to cut a long story short, I wasn't really booking anything. And then I booked one final job and I couldn't fit into a pair of leather trousers. And this woman, this stylist on the shoot, made my life really difficult that day. And I just knew that there was something off. I knew that I'd done something wrong. And, you know, again, it felt like such a big attack because it's obviously you, it's your body. Only you can get down to a certain size, or, you know, realistically you can't because you're, you know, you have bones, women have curves and stuff like that. So I got back to London and this woman called my agent and just said, you know, she was too big, blah, blah, blah. And so that was the catalyst moment where I was then dropped. And they said to me, you know, not everyone's designed to be a model. I think you'd be best suited to work somewhere else. And, you know, we really appreciate how much you go to the gym, but it just really isn't going to work for you. And it was really bizarre because it was almost like this moment, this like trigger that went off in my brain where suddenly I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, hang on a second, I'm taller than most people I know. I'm thinner than most people I know. Why do I feel so bad about myself constantly? And so I was on the tube and I wrote this Facebook post. And this was at a time really where things didn't really go viral. Now, obviously, you know, a cat goes viral every day, like a tortoise on a skateboard or something goes viral. I don't know. But at the time, things weren't going viral. And so it kind of blew up. And I went upstairs for a bath. And when I came downstairs, it had been shared like 200 something times within about an hour. And I was like, what is going on? And then someone from a newspaper, I won't say who, but a newspaper found it. And they were like, well, you know, can you give us a quote about why you wrote this? And I didn't want the attention, actually. I was like, no, thank you. I'm okay. And then they published it anyway. And, you know, and then another press thing, this is how the press works. You know, once one person publishes something, another person copies it, another person. So then, you know, the next day I was in my kitchen and I was on BBC politics show with my face on the TV screen. I was like, this is honestly like an out of body experience, because yesterday I was just a normal person that was angry on the tube. So anyway, very long winded answer, but to cut a long story short, is because I've been treated really badly. And it took me a really long time to understand that the way I looked was normal. And, you know, women have flaws, women have insecurities, and the modeling industry has a massive influence on the way that women view themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine being a young woman, you know, as a woman anyway, you struggle with self-image without then almost being gaslit by an agent, a sort of a company that you trust and respect. So that must have really impacted your kind of mental well-being and sense of self. And after that moment, and I'm not sure how quickly after that, and I'd love for you to sort of break down the process, but then you moved to the States and things slightly shifted for you when you got there.
Yeah. Well, you know, you tend to look back on your life and you think that, oh, you know, it's happened very, it's all gone upwards or something like that, but it doesn't. It goes like a wiggly line and it goes down and it goes up and it goes down and it goes up. So yeah, an agent from America messaged me and she said, look, I've seen you online. Obviously, you know, it's, you can't really miss it, because I mean, it was published everywhere. It was so bizarre. And even like Pakistan News or something covered it, which is very random. And she asked, do you want to come to New York? And I'd always been told that I wouldn't make it in New York. I was too short and too big. And until I looked like this size, I wasn't going to do it, blah, blah, blah. So that was kind of weird. I you know, again, about gaslighting and these older women and men gaslighting you and stuff. And I kind of thought, well, maybe I do have the opportunity. Maybe I can do it. Maybe just because you don't think I'm good enough, maybe someone else does. And so even though there was a massive part of me that wanted just to quit modeling and think, fuck this, I never want to do it again, there was another side of me that thought, no, actually, I want to try the opportunity. And even if it doesn't work out, at least I've given it a try. So I got on a plane and I went to New York, and I was there for 5 years. And, you know, it was over there that I discovered the plus size modeling movement. And I was one of the first people there really where, you know, the plus size movement was very, very small at the time. No one was really doing it. And I obviously wasn't going to ever be big. I'm also never going to be super skinny. So my agent at the time said to me, why don't we, you know, market you as who you are, which is an in-between size person, and just go from there and see how it works. So that's what we did. But it was very difficult in the beginning because, you know, I turn up to some castings and they'd be like, why the hell are you here? You're way too thin. And I go to other ones and they wouldn't even look at me because I was way too big or whatever, you know, it's very weird.
So you try to almost create your own category, and yet you were ahead of your time because you didn't fit into one convention sort of nor another. And how did that make you feel?
Yeah, I mean, it was just really difficult. And the first year, I think about the year and a half that I was there, I didn't make any money. And by any money, I mean literally nothing. And I just thought, I can't afford to do this anymore. And I'd paid up front from whatever money I had to stay 3 months in this place in Brooklyn, like in the depths of Brooklyn. It was like such a shithole. It was awful. It was so rough. And it was opposite a laundrette and it was just so depressing. Anyway, I paid for 3 months up front for that. And my mum said, look, you're in New York now. She's like, you've paid for 3 months up front. But she said, you're going to go back. You're going to do these 3 months and you're going to see how it goes. And if it doesn't work, you're coming back and you're getting a normal job and that's it. Because you've given all these years of your life for modeling. You know, you've been in New York for this year and a half. You need to make this happen now. Otherwise, it's not going to work. So it was the first time in my life where I just thought, yeah, you're absolutely right. I have given it my all. And you're absolutely right. I need to just either make it or break it kind of thing. So I went back to New York and it was really bizarre. The first month that I was there, after having years of not doing anything, I had a book offer. I suddenly got a job for like $12,000, which for me was like, what? Like, I'd never had this much money before in my life. And then I had another job the week after for like $5,000. And I was like, what is happening? Like, how is this all of a sudden happening? You know, after years of literally having nothing and getting debt collection bills. So suddenly then things started to work out. But it was because I stuck to my guns and I became who I was meant to be. And I stuck to who I was. In the past, I'd always tried to be someone who I wasn't. And all of a sudden I became, you know, the person who I was meant to be, and it worked out.
I think that's brilliant. And if we were to sum you up, authentic would definitely be a word that we would use. I mean, I guess your advocacy around body positivity does stem from that sort of personal journey. And has your work that you do daily sort of helped with your ongoing recovery and your accountability? And how do you show up against your demons? Like, what does a good day look like for you? Because I guess, as Jordan said before, you know, this is an ongoing piece of work. This might be a life's work in making yourself feel good and loving yourself and there and believing that.
Yeah, well, I still am a tiny bit a people pleaser. I don't like to rock the boat too much. I don't like to upset people. And once I kind of took rein of that and realized actually not everyone's going to like me. So, you know, you can kind of forget that. And once I started to put myself first in a lot of ways, that makes me feel good. You know, if you're constantly trying to please people, you're never going to be happy, basically. So I very much try to know my boundaries. I try to know when enough is enough. For example, literally as I'm talking to you right now, I have a kidney infection. I was in Germany on a job and in the middle of the night I got a kidney infection and things like that. So I couldn't go to a doctor. I didn't know what to do. And I was like, should I go to the job? And in the past, I mean, the amount of stuff I've done modeling wise, I'm in a bit of a different position now, because I do more than just modeling. But in the past, when I've just done modeling things, I've really pushed myself to the absolute limit. And it was, and you know, the other day I thought, okay, well, yeah, I will go to the job, but I'm only going to go for a few hours. I'm ill. I don't need to go if I'm feeling really bad. You know, it's not my problem. These things happen. So that's what I did. So I just said, look, I'll come, but I'll do it for a couple of hours. That's absolutely fine. I still did my bit. I'm still recovering now, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, it's about knowing that. It's about not forcing yourself beyond your means. It's about enjoying the little things in life as well.
So, Charlie, you referenced boundaries and kind of feeling more empowered to sort of set those parameters. But for most people starting up, you know, in the early stages of their careers, whether it be modeling or anything, boundaries are really hard to instill. And so you have to look to the companies, the organizations, the individuals within those businesses to behave appropriately. Now, within the modeling industry, do you feel that there's a sort of significant shift now, and actually for people coming through now, it's a better place to be versus what, you know, you had to endure in your earlier days?
I do. I think that there is still a long way to go. And I hear stories still of girls that have been told, you know, they're too big or too fat when they're a size 6 to 8. I mean, I get DMs about that every day. So I do know it still happens. But I do think that models now are having more of a voice. I think that it's a bit of a vicious cycle because, you know, in the past, modeling agencies were getting models based on what brands wanted. Now, because of social media, the consumer has more of a say on what, you know, what they want, what they want to see. If they want a model that's bigger, they will say that. If a model's too thin, they will say, why are you using a model that's clearly anorexic or has eating problems in these photos? Doesn't make me feel good. So, you know, it's kind of going a bit back and forth. I think that modeling agencies now are listening also to the consumer a bit more and also to the brands a bit more, rather than just thinking we have to mold these girls to fit what the brands want. So I do think things are changing a bit. I know that there is a really great organization in the US called the Model Alliance, which is like the first real, the first trade union. The Model Alliance is the first trade union to really stick up for models and give them a voice and say to them, actually, they deserve to be paid on time. They don't deserve to be waiting a year, which is what's happened to me before, if ever. Sometimes brands have gone bust and then you never get paid. So it's all these different kinds of things that women are doing. But I think it's just an exciting time for women in general. I think that women are really having a voice now, not only in the modeling industry or the fashion industry, but just in corporations all over. You know, they're saying, actually, I don't deserve to get groped at work. I don't deserve to have weird comments made to me. I don't deserve to be spoken over or like all these different things. So I think it is an exciting time in general for women, really.
You raised a really interesting point earlier on, saying that women have more of a voice, and yet there's this paradox because there is also a sort of silencing of women. When you think about the rise of violence against women, the minimizing of women's rights, if you think in Russia, they've actually decriminalized domestic abuse, abortion rights in Texas are pretty much illegal. You know, it feels like there's this overriding feeling that at the same time we're sort of got our blazers and power pads going, we can do this, but at the, you know, there feels like there's also an undoing and sort of backward pedal, a backward step in some ways. How do you feel about that as a kind of a general sort of overview?
I mean, I think women have still got such a long way to go before we're considered equal. I think there are still a lot of problems with what feminism means. Obviously, you know, it's great that feminism can be intersectional, whatever, but I still think that people view feminism as a very scary word. They view it as a very negative term, including lots of women as well, and women that are older than us. They view it as like women that don't shave their armpits and that hate men, which just isn't the truth at all. I think that it's about teaching women that, you know, that you can have all these different things in life. Again, it's awful that we still live in a world where men continue to control women's bodies and things like that, but I think that we will get there eventually. But in order to do that, women also have to have each other's backs. You know, it's not all because of men as well. There are a lot of women, like I was saying before, that are also quite negative. There are lots of women who don't believe women should have rights to abortion. There are lots of women who think, you know, that a woman's place is at home, and if they get a slap from their husband, that they somehow deserve that. It's bizarre, but you just have to go on YouTube and look at the Trump rally videos to understand that those people very much exist, you know? So yeah, it's a very scary time, but also a very exciting time, because I think now women are having more of a voice than they ever have before. Again, governments need to change. I think, yeah, I could go on a rant basically about all the different things that need to change.
There's so much to unpack.
Yeah.
Charlie, now we know your story and the reasons why you're showing up today, we wanted to chat a bit about the work that you're doing, because you are the ultimate polymath. You've got fingers in a lot of pies. One of the things that we wanted to talk about was the fact that you are a role model and you take this very, very seriously. You've written two books now, Misfit and Splash, both kind of underpinned by the notion of self-confidence, but for different audiences. What was that process like, and actually going a beat back to the sense of being a role model, how does that make you feel? Is there a pressure in that people are looking up to you, and an expectation that might be attached to that?
Yeah, I guess the role model thing, I don't always feel like I am, but obviously the more you do, like for example writing books for children, that comes with being a bit more sensible perhaps what you post on social media, which you've had to tell me about before. But you know, it's just about being a bit more conscious of that, because obviously you don't want to let younger people down, and you know, with that does come responsibility. I love writing. I did that really, again, as a way to pass time. Honestly, you know, I was talking earlier about the year that I wasn't doing anything. I spent a lot of that year writing a book, and that was Splash. And I sent it to my book agent at the time, who said to me that it wasn't very good and it wouldn't get anywhere. And I was like, okay, thanks very much. That's very upsetting. And then about 2 weeks after that, I then got a call saying that it had been taken on by a publisher. So I was like, okay, that was a bit weird. Yeah, but I absolutely love writing. It's just my favorite thing. I did that again out of love and because I wanted to write. It's just so therapeutic as well. And just to be, you know, sat there and get all your thoughts out and organize them in a very methodical way. I love that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Jordan and I are both parents, and we've got girls and boys in our sort of family unit. I actually think your book that's aimed predominantly at young girls is a bit of a Bible, and it's also sort of evergreen and dateless. I would love my daughter to have it by her bedside as a reference point, you know, just to dip in and out of, because I think that, you know, we've got kids of all ages and we're seeing in real time, you know, anxiety and hormone drops, and you know, in my house it's GCSEs and menopause. I mean, like, it's a barrel of laughs. but I kind of think in the same way that we are and should educate our daughters, we should our sons as well. And Jordan and I have spoken at length about this. I mean, I remember taking all the kids to, you know, the Women's Day rally, and 80% positive, 85% positive, and some comments around, what are the boys doing here? And if, you know, we don't raise our boys and our men to appreciate women and think of them as equal, then we're not doing our job. But I'm sort of interested, having kids who are now discovering social media and online, and I've got twins, as you know, of 9, 10, who are just about to get their very first phones, and I will give them this thing, they'll go off to school and they'll just be on the internet, because social media, I know, can be used for good as well. And, you know, Jordan and I have spoken a lot about our kids taking solace and getting education, but there's a dark side to the internet and to social media, as we all know. And I guess, how do you stop going down a rabbit hole of self-loathing and of images and people and brands that don't make you feel good? What do you do to get yourself out of that?
Well, this is the thing, you know, when I started having social media, I was about 14, 15 with MySpace, Bebo. I don't know if you guys remember Bebo. MySpace, Bebo, Facebook had just launched at the time. And I don't know, it was, it's just been a bit of like a learning curve really as well, you know, with what to post, what not to post, what's sensible, what's not sensible. You know, children make mistakes when you're on it, when you're a child, you know, blah, blah, blah. But now we live in a time where people are a bit more conscious about what they post and what they look at. And what's amazing now is that, you know, you can choose the media you want to see. You do not have to follow people that make you feel bad. You can unfollow them. You can, you know, deliberately follow people who make you feel good, follow accounts that make you feel good, mute the ones that don't. the mute button, by the way, has been a lifesaver for me because there are lots of people on there that I do not care about what they post. And I'm like, okay, great. But it's very, very important. And again, it's just, it's a learning curve for all of us because we're obviously of the generation where it's like, we've been taught you have to be really careful about what you post and things like that. And everything can be held against you, really. Whereas, you know, the generation after us definitely feel that they are a bit more woke and they understand, you know, more about things and stuff. But yeah, it must be terrifying, really, as a parent. I don't have all the advice, but I know that they don't have to follow accounts that make them feel bad. If Instagram had existed at a time 10 years ago when I was on it, I think I would have just gone into more of a spiral, honestly, because I would be following people that were just not good. Now, of course, there's so much more diversity on there, so much more knowledge, so much more information that you just didn't have growing up. So actually, I think it is more positive than negative, unlike the media would have you believe.
So two books in and numerous covers and, you know, faces of campaigns and really kind of putting your advocacy to work, you then launched Squish. That has been an incredible journey. It's not been around very long, and yet you've got amazing distribution. The campaigns are always a joy. They make me feel good. They make me feel seen and included. And yet it's not really aimed at me. Who is Squish aimed at? And what do you hope to do in terms of being disruptive in the beauty industry with it?
I guess Squish is aimed towards the girl that I was at 15 or 16, you know, someone who was a bit insecure, someone who started to have the internet as, you know, inspirational or whatever, a bit of pressure from the internet, and who was just going through the added pressure of hormones and insecurities and things like that. So all of our photos are completely unretouched. All of our skincare is vegan, which is obviously very important anyway, but I think even more so nowadays, people are very conscious about what they put on their skin and not harming animals, which is very important to me as well. And it's just skincare that's just meant to make you feel good. But I really wanted to create a campaign around it that was positive and where you saw acne and where you saw stretch marks and girls of all different shapes and sizes. So a ton of our budget went on the photos, really, and just having girls see themselves.
So Charlie, you have got many strings to your bow. Did you ever sort of set out to sort of have all of these kind of accomplishments across writing, having your own business, modeling? Did that just happen organically, or was that just a part of the wider strategy for you?
Well, I'll be honest, I didn't think that it was a possibility. I didn't think that you could have all these different things and have your fingers in loads of different pies. I thought you had to just stick to one sector and then hopefully grow from that. And it would, you know, if you did modeling for a bit, then maybe that would lead on to something else eventually. I thought that if I was going to write a book, it would be when I was much older. I didn't think it was going to be when I was younger. So the fact that I can do that, I find really exciting. And now we talk a lot about, you know, being multi-hyphenates or whatever it's called, as Emma Gannon says. But, you know, I genuinely didn't think that was possible. And actually, if I'm being completely honest, guys, it wasn't until I met you two that I realized that I could actually do more with my life in that sense anyway. I didn't realize that I could have a business and do all these other amazing things. So yeah, I mean, you know, it kind of has grown organically, but also it's still very new to me. I mean, every day I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing all these amazing things. So it's very exciting, but it's also, you know, if I think back to sitting in this flat I had in Peckham, and I used to think, oh God, you know, I've got to stick, you know, how long is modeling going to last for? You know, where can I go from that? If it doesn't work out, what am I going to do? Because I don't really have any qualifications, if I'm being honest. I don't really have anything else. So that was like a really big worry. But yeah, it's been amazing. And I think everything happens for a reason. Obviously, I met you guys for a reason, and you guys have changed my life. So I'm very happy about that. But yeah, it just blows my mind sometimes.
Well, we didn't pay Charlie to say that, so
no,
I just want to be very clear about that.
Yeah, no money isn't paid tax. So to round up each episode, we want to ask our guests, how can we all show up too? What are some of the things that, Charlie, you would say to anyone that might be listening to this about how they can show up? And I guess, you know, not just in the small corner of the world that you hope to change, but what makes us accountable? What makes us as human beings live more harmoniously together? What little things can we all do to just be better people, I guess.
Use your voice. You know inherently if something's bad or good or not. You know, most people listening are not psychopaths. They have feelings. They'll understand that other people have feelings. You understand the issues that are going on in the world, whether it's environmental, whether it's about women's rights, whatever it is. Use your voice for good. If you see something bad happening, speak up. You don't have to be famous in order to do that. You don't have to be well known. But if you stick up for someone in the workplace, if you see something happening in the street that's bad, if you, you know, see something on social media you don't like, then stand up for people. I think that's what showing up is. And I know that there are people that I wish stood up for me. And I know that there are people that I still want to continue to stick up for. And I think that's what showing up is definitely about.
That's brilliant, Charlie. And kind of our final question, really, are there any changes that, you know, we can make? I think you've really touched on that about using your voice, but any useful books that you've read or sort of accounts to follow that can help make the world a bit more body positive?
Body positive. There are so many cool women. Once you get onto one account, you tend to find another one. So I wouldn't be able to tell you loads of different names, but I think that, you know, if you want to go for models, Ashley Graham's obviously amazing. Crystal Ren was one of the first models that did the plus size modeling thing, and she had a very similar story to me, so I love her. I don't know. I also think just accounts, you know, of like maybe old Greek marble statues. If you look at all these old Grecian marble statues, you see all the curves and you see the folds in the skin, and you realise that actually, you know, this hatred towards curves is a very modern idea. You know, even up until, you know, the 50s, having curves was a very sexy thing. And so I just think a lot of these vintage accounts are also very interesting to follow.
Great. Well, we'll include some additional accounts and interesting books and charities to follow in the show notes. But just leaves us to say thank you very much, Charlie, for showing up with Good Culture. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Wow, what a brilliant conversation. I mean, we've had the pleasure of knowing Charlie and working with Charlie since, you know, 2015, 2016, whenever it was. And, you know, I knew quite a lot about her and the work she does. And I'm a fan, and my daughter is a fan, and my friend's a fan. But, you know, I'm always blown away by her candor, by the generous way in which she shares experiences and perspectives.
I know. And you know, I think the thing that I really just liked from the chat, and there was so much kind of rich conversation, but I think that thing about not being defined by, you know, those sort of moments, you know, being a mom, being a wife, being a partner, and actually redefining some of the moments that we celebrate about kind of, you know, going to university, starting your own business. And I think that kind of language is something that I really want to continue and really instill in Jada and sort of my nieces as well. I think it's really important to not be defined by, you know, another person. And it's actually you define yourself. And I think that's really powerful.
So another thing that really stood out for me was this notion of you're living in the present. And, I really try and do this myself. And Charlie says something so interesting. If you're depressed, you're living in the past. If you're anxious, you're living in the future. And if you're comfortable and content, and I love the very misunderstood word content, you're living in the present. I don't know. I think there's so much comfort and simplicity with that as a notion.
Couldn't agree more.
Okay, guys, thank you so, so much for listening to this episode of Showing Up. And a huge thank you to the awesome Charlie for sharing her story.
We'll be back soon with another inspiring guest. So remember to follow the podcast on your favorite app. Thank you.